Good evening. Our parsha is Parshat Shlach. Our parsha brings us to face the weakness of the Jewish people, and it's a weakness we each have within us from the beginning of time. This is a theme that goes on over and over and over again, and it goes on in a way that is so difficult. We saw it in last week's parsha. Aaron and Miriam speak about Moshe Rabbeinu, and although they get punished, but we have to ask ourselves, did we learn the lesson? Because right away we hear the story of 10 leaders of the Jewish people who come back and convince the people, Besinat Hashem Otanu Hotzianu Me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are words that if the Torah wouldn't record them, we wouldn't imagine that someone could say this. Hashem hates us. That's why He took us out of Mitzrayim. Besinat Hashem Otanu Hotzianu Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That's what the people say. Hashem hates us. That's why He took us out of Mitzrayim. It's unfathomable. Oh, but it is fathomable. It is. Anyone who's been a parent knows how children can talk this way. And if a person is honest with themselves, we recognize how we can talk this way. How a person can, in the blink of an eyelash, forget all the blessings they have in life and only look at the thing that they wish they had, and suddenly everything's bad. A person can forget all the blessings in their lives. I have an acquaintance. I don't have the good fortune of being his friend yet, but he's an acquaintance of mine. And I've known him for a number of years. Ever since I know him, he's divorced. And ever since I know him, his life has been getting harder. He's coming in his years. He lives alone. This organ needed an operation. That organ needed an operation. Suddenly his body isn't functioning the way it's used to. It's difficult to do things that once upon a time he didn't have to think twice about. And he's all alone. He's all alone. So someone asked him, how are you doing? So he said, thank God. So the person said, how are you managing alone? So he said, I am thankful for the beautiful years that Hashem gave me. I had a number of beautiful years in my life. I merited to have a marriage for those years. I merited to have children. And I am thankful for the beautiful things Hashem gave me in my life. And I was blown away. You'll tell me, does he mean it? Doesn't he mean it? I have no way of knowing what's inside a person's heart, but I am impressed when a person can talk that way. When a person knows full well, they wake up every morning to being alone, they go to sleep every night to being alone, they have challenges in so many realms in their life, and they say, thank you, Rabbon Shalom, for the good that you've given me. Ever since I heard that, I look at him in awe. Just look at him in awe. Adam and Chava revealed to us a basic human weakness that we have to contend with our whole lives. The ability to look at a garden filled with beautiful fruit and say, but there's one that he's not keeping from us. He doesn't really love us. You see, if he did really love us, then he would give us A or B or C. That thought that a person can tell themselves, because I don't have a specific thing, then I will project that onto everything else. The ability to block out all the blessings and say, but I don't have this, and so therefore nothing's good. The ability to look with an evil eye, ayin hara, and speak with an evil tongue, lashon hara. This is the great human weakness from the beginning of time. And it begins with the way Adam looks at the blessings Hashem gave him, and it turns to the way Adam looks at his own wife. Aisha asher natata imadi, that woman you put here with me. He natan ali min ha'etz, she's the one that gave me from the fruit v'ochelen ha'etz. So we have to face up to this if we stand the chance at conquering this trait. So David HaMelech is told by Mephibosheth, he's told by Tziva, Mephibosheth's servant, that Mephibosheth, the son of Yonatan, his best friend, was in cahoots with the rebellion against him. And he believes it. And he loses his kingdom over it. So David did not fix the transgression of Shaul, who hears Lashon Hara from Doeg HaAdomi, that David was supported in his rebellion by Ahimelech. And then Shaul executes the whole city of Nov. And in that, Shaul brings about the demise of his own death, his own life, his own children. Shaul, it says in the Medrash, Hashem said about him in heaven, I'm willing to forgive him for other things he did wrong. I can't forgive him for what he did to Nov, the city of Kohanim, as a result of accepting Lashon Hara. Doeg, who was Abir Aroim, he was the greatest of rabbis. And it says about him, he has no portion in the world to come. It says in David HaMelech's time, David worked very hard on educating the children. Everyone knew Torah. Everyone was masters of Torah. He had phenomenal education going on throughout his kingdom. And David would pray over these children and he'd say, they're growing up in a generation that deserves to be annihilated. David felt that his generation deserved the Holocaust. And the reason, says David, because there's Lashon Hara. Because people speak badly about one another behind their backs. The ability of people to take something truthful and view it in a negative light and present it in a negative light, that, says David, makes the generation unworthy of existing. David says, I have to pray about these kids. They're growing up in this generation. The generation of Achav was very into paganism. Achav had pagan, all kinds of things all over. He brought in prophets. He had all kinds of paganistic cults going on in Israel. And they were the ones running the show with Achav and his wife. Yet, whenever they'd go to war, they had miraculous victories because they didn't have Lashon Hara. People would not talk badly about one another. Why is Elisha the prophet who takes over for Elio? Elisha was not the biggest prophet of the time. On the final day of Elio, Elijah's travels, so Elisha meets up with groups of prophets. And each one tells him, Hayadata, do you know, ki ayom, today, Hashem lokach et adonecha, Hashem is taking your master, or say, just say, they were telling Elisha, he's your master, he's not ours, he's your teacher, he's not ours, he's bigger than you, he's not bigger than us. They were all prophets who were so big that Eliyahu was not their teacher. They were bigger than Elisha. So why did they take over after... why did Elisha take over after Elio? Because Elisha was his student. He learned how to be a kind person from Elio. The main teaching of a prophet is how to be a kind person. It's not so simple. It's not so simple. When Yeshua continues the path of Moshe, it's not only about Torah. It's also about being a kind person. And that's why Yeshua is considered his disciple. Kalev was a bigger Talmid Chacham than Yeshua. Otniel ben Kenaz was a bigger Talmid Chacham than Yeshua. Yeshua was not number one in Torah, our sages say. That's what the Midrash Tanhuma says. It says Kalev and Osniel ben Kenaz were on the level of Moshe. Yeshua was not. So then why was Yeshua the next leader? Because Yeshua perfected his traits like Moshe. They knew Torah like Moshe. He knew how to be a kind person like Moshe. When you learn, it's not only about the Torah, it's also about how to be a kind person. And that's what Yeshua learned better than anyone else. So he was the one fit to be the next leader of the Jewish people. This is a very difficult challenge. Our parsha forces us to face our own weakness. Chazal say, the person who tells over Lashon Hara is evil. The person who listens to Lashon Hara is worse. Worse. What are you saying? I didn't say anything. Yeah, but you listened and you believed. And our parsha shows us how very big people, the 10 top leaders of the Jewish people, fell to this weakness. And our parsha reveals to us that Yoshua was also prone to falling to this weakness, as was Kalev ben Yefune. It is so easy to see bad. It is so easy to say things are really bad there. Very easy. And every one of us knows our own experiences here in Israel. How a person can tell his friends it's difficult, or a person can tell his friends it's wonderful. It's a choice we make. How are we going to look at our existence here? It's a choice we make about all of life. It's not only a choice about the land of Israel. It's a choice we repeatedly make. You've probably seen this, and if you haven't, then you will. There are people who are married to wonderful people, and they don't stop complaining about them. There are people who are married to miserable people, and you don't see them stopping to smile. You see, they're positive towards life, even with their hardships. No one goes through life unscathed. No one will live through this lifetime without having hardships and challenges and tremendous, even tragedies. Everyone has their share of challenges in life. And then everyone has their periods of challenges in life. And you don't know how you'll come out of it. You hope you'll come out of it with less scars, and you'll heal. But no one has control. Yet, we have a choice how we're going to view this life. And that's a choice we make every day. It's a choice we make every day. Some of the rabbis that you know around Machon Meir, that seem to be the happiest people here, have undergone the greatest tragedies in their lives. And it says in Emunot V'deot, Rav Sadia Gaon, he writes, one of the reasons God gives people challenges is because when they stand up to the challenge, everyone learns from them how you stand up to a challenge. That's another. So then he gives other reasons. So then that reason.
Terror attack in Tamas years ago, where right. You know, the terrorist kills the baby and afterwards the parents, and instead one kid's upset and they don't know if it's going to be alive or not alive after they've been killed.
Right, right. That's why he gives other reasons. I said, so it's one of the reasons.
It's right,
right?
They don't know.
Right.
That's the last thing they go with.
Right.
How can you make that positive?
That's another class. That's not this class. It's another class. So as we approach our parsha, we're approaching a human flaw that manifests itself in our parsha in a major way. But it's a challenge we face daily on one level, and there will be times in our life when we face it in a much more major way. We have times in our life where we make choices which will define, they will be defining moments in our life of how we will play out this challenge. For Adam and Eve, it was a defining moment. They will accept the Lashon Hara or not. They will look at Hashem as a stingy, evil creator of the world, or they will see the blessings in their life. And when they make the wrong choice, they bring about destruction for all future generations. However, in our own lives, We have to make this choice. The idea of, will I look at how Hashem treats me and what Hashem does to me in my life, positively or negatively, is not only the challenge of Adam and Chava. It's not only the Jewish people who could turn on all the miracles they've had. They have they have bread falling from heaven, right? Money's coming down from heaven. And what do they say? God hates us. B'sinat Hashem otanu. God hates us. That's why He took us out of Egypt. And it shows us to the extreme how far people can go, how far we can go. The parsha is a reflection of us. It's a question of how we approach the blessings Hashem gives us in our life. We begin our parsha. It is a difficult parsha. It is a parsha that records the tragedy of the Jewish people, because when the Jewish people failed in this week's parsha on the 9th of Av, and they spent the 9th of Av weeping needlessly, Hashem said, "Atem bichitem bichiyah shel chinam." You wept for nothing. Vani, and Hashem says, I will set this night as a set night where tragedies have befallen the Jewish people. And Hashem gave us reason to cry on this night. Both Beit HaMikdash, both temples were destroyed on this night. Many tragedies befell the Jewish people on the night of Tisha B'Av. And so we begin our parsha as we approach that day, the 9th of Av. That day, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Hashem tells Moshe, now that the Jews have come clambering and saying, let's send spies, let's send people, we want to see what the land is like. And Moshe thinks about it, and then finally Moshe thinks, okay, there's some merit to what they're asking. So Moshe asks Hashem, and Hashem says, Shelach Lecha. You want, you can send. Shelach lecha anashim. If you want to, you can send. So, we send the spies. We send the spies. The tribe of Levi doesn't have a representation. Hashem tells us, there are things that I make available to you, and I'm not happy you took advantage of it. And so, we see the mitzvah of appointing a king, a monarch. Hashem makes it available, and then Hashem says, "Etin lecha melech be'api." I'm angry that you asked for a king. The Jewish people send spies. Hashem says, "You want to, you can," and we don't get the hint. We send the spies. Shlach lecha anashim. They spy out the land, and there's a representative for each tribe. It's supposed to be unity. Each one will send their leader, their representative. The tribe of Ephraim is described as the tribe of Ephraim. The tribe of Menashe is described as the tribe of Yosef, the tribe of Menashe. Yosef is one of the examples we have in Tanakh for tragedies that befell the Jewish people because of Lashon Hara. Yosef is the one that tells his father bad things about his brothers, which ultimately leads to the infighting, which ultimately leads to Yosef being sold to Egypt, which ultimately leads the whole Jewish people down to Egypt. And so Yoshua, who's from the tribe of Ephraim, is described as Yoshua, the representative of Ephraim. But the representative of the tribe of Menashe is described as the representative of Yosef, because he, unfortunately, will be one of the spies that will, like Yosef, fall to the transgression of the Lashon Hara. Yoshua's name is changed from Hoshea to Yoshua. Throughout the Torah calls him Yoshua because the Torah honors the name that Moshe gave him. Moshe changed his name to Yoshua, so the Torah calls him Yoshua. Avigdor was named Moshe by Miriam. So throughout the Torah, he's called Moshe. His parents called him Avigdor, right? But Moshe Rabbeinu isn't called Avigdor in the Torah. He's called Moshe. The Torah honors the name that Miriam gave him. Miriam, I'm sorry. Thank you. That Batya, Pharaoh's daughter, gave him. Thank you. Batya, Pharaoh's daughter, gave him. Toda rabah.
Question for leaders.
Yes.
It's not the Nasi's and Hosh and Nas, so these are different men. So it's not the leader of the tribes and the other four, the chieftain. So who are these new leaders? What happens to the original ones?
So the question was asked over here, the names of these spies doesn't match the names of the Nesiim, the leaders in Parshas Noso. So how come I said they're leaders? So there are two interpretations. One interpretation says they are the same people. They were given different names here to reflect their behavior. This isn't their real names. The Torah gave them nicknames. The other interpretation says that when the Torah says Kol Nasi Vahem, all the leaders amongst them, it's a continuation of the commandment to appoint representation. Every tribe will appoint a representative. All the leaders amongst them will appoint a representative for each tribe. It's not telling you who the representative will be. It's going back to the commandment to appoint representation, that each tribe will appoint. The Nasi of each tribe will be the one appointing. That's what the Pasuk is saying, Kol Nasi Vahem. Good evening, Yosef. Well, I guess there was someone named Yosef. Yeah, I guess they used the name Yosef for later generations as well. His father's name was Yosef. There were many Jews named Yosef. Yigal ben Yosef is a right? Yeah, in the tribe of Yisachar, they also gave the name Yosef, yeah. Yeah. Last year, we learned a commentary of Rav Charlap. Rav Charlap explained that when Moshe changed Yoshua's name, he was in fact appointing Yoshua in charge of all the spies. Yoshua was supposed to guide the spies, and Yoshua didn't succeed. And based on that, we understood that when Yoshua is appointed 38 years later as the leader of the Jewish people, everyone keeps telling Yoshua, be strong. We don't find that by any other leader. But if we understand, like Rav Charlap explained, that Yoshua didn't succeed in holding on to the reins, he didn't succeed in guiding the 10 spies in this week's parasha, so then we understand why, when in fact Yoshua was appointed king, so the people tell him, if anyone rebels against you, we'll kill him. You're the leader, be strong. Why does he need all that? Perhaps this is the interpretation. So, Moshe guides them how to travel. It says in the Midrash that as they were checking out the land, one of the giants came out and saw them and yelled at them, what are you doing? And his yelling was so powerful that they all fell. They all landed flat on their backs. And then he collected them and he said, are you here to spy the land? So they said, no, we just came to take some grapes. We came to take a fig. We came to take a pomegranate. That's all we came for. So he said, fine, then I'll let you go. And that's why he remained alive later, because he didn't kill them. Because he let them go. The Medrash says that when he said, Alu Zeh, when Moshe Rabbeinu told them, go up like this, the word Zeh, well, the word Zeh, earlier in Torah, it says, Ve'tamate hazeh tikach biyadecha. Hashem told Moshe, take this staff that turned into a snake and turned back into a staff. So that staff is called Hamateh HaZeh. So that staff had whatever miraculous powers it had, Moshe gave it to them. He said, when you're going into Israel, take this staff with you. And the Medrash says that's how they escaped the giants, with Moshe's staff. Whatever that means. They're going into the land of Israel. And when they come into Israel, so Hashem takes good care of them. Everywhere they go, Hashem causes people to die. So the inhabitants are busy burying their dead, and no one has time to pay attention to them. They interpret it badly. They say, look at what a land this is. Everywhere we went, people were dropping like flies. People are dying everywhere. This isn't an easy challenge. You know, there was a man who was sent by God to do a challenge. His name was Avraham Avinu. He went up to do the Akedah. He finished the binding of his son, and someone went and told his wife, Sarah, you know what just happened? He told her what just happened. She had a massive heart attack. She dropped dead. Avram comes back from the Akedah, and he hears that when Sarah heard about the Akedah, she dropped dead. So how's Avram supposed to understand that? So the Torah tells us, Vayiyu Chayei Sarah. Sarah's life, from the moment Hashem created the world, her life was supposed to be 127 years. That was the plan from the time of creation. But Avram doesn't know that. What Avram sees is, oh my gosh, look what I did. I did that Akedah, and she dropped dead when she heard about it. How did I do that? Avram has to contend with the guilt, that feeling that I did what was right, but the outcome doesn't seem so right. So do we sit here and say, Rabban Shalom, why'd you do that? Rabban Shalom, what was I supposed to do? Rabban Shalom, explain to me, could I have done it any better? What could I have done better? What did I do wrong? So Avraham Avinu could ask himself and come to the conclusion, I did everything right, so then why is the outcome not pleasant? It's not fun for him to bury his wife. But that is the tests of Avraham Avinu over and over again. When Avraham Avinu stands for monotheism, they throw him into jail for 7 years. When Avraham Avinu listens to Hashem and travels to Canaan, a famine breaks out in Canaan. When Avraham Avinu travels down to Egypt, his wife gets abducted. When Avraham Avinu refuses to steal from the people of the land, his nephew Lot, his only relative, leaves him. When Avraham Avinu tries to do what's right, he's sanctifying Hashem's name, so the four kings come to war. They take his nephew, they come to attack him. Avraham Avinu has to deal with a life where he constantly does what Hashem wants, and it leads him to the next challenge. It does not lead him to a life of calm, tranquility, everything's going great. No. We do what's right, and Hashem says, good for you, get ready for the next challenge. It's not going to be easy. And the final challenge is when Avraham Avinu does the binding of Yitzchak, and he comes home to find his wife had dropped dead. So imagine how Avraham Avinu felt on top of that mountain. A miraculous goat comes running down. This has been planned from the beginning of creation. Atayadati ki ere Elokim atash, and gives him a round of applause. Avraham Avinu, good for you. You stood up for the test. And now you know you're a God-fearing person. And then for generations, this merit will stand by you. And at the same time that he's standing there getting all these compliments, and the Rabban Shalom's telling him everything's good, his wife's body is getting cold, because she dropped dead. Because as he was doing it, she saw it. And then she dropped dead. And his wife's body is slowly cooling off because she's dead. And Avraham Avinu comes home to find his wife dead. So now, Avraham, how do you deal with that? So that's the challenge of Lashon Hara. The challenge that the Jewish people fell in this week's Parsha. Do we look at life? Do we look at the world and say, Besinat Hashem Otanu, God hates us. Otherwise, why would things be going so bad? Besinat Hashem Otanu, the Jewish people said something that every person can say in their life. God must hate me if he made this world this way. Why does there have to be this suffering? Why do things not work out right? Why is this world so imperfect, it seems? And we have to deal in this world. And at the root of Lashon Hara is that we look at things negatively. We can look in hindsight and say, wait a second, this was Hashem's plan from day one. Sarah was supposed to die on this day. If I would have done it this way or that way. Someone once asked me, what's the best way to go? So I said, I don't know if we should discuss it. He said, no, what's the best way to go? So I'll tell you, but not on the record, what I said to him. Sorry, guys. You come here. There's stuff you get that you don't get online. And it's always a choice we make. And everyone has hardships. Everyone has challenges. Everyone has disappointments. And everyone has moments where they say, why does this world have to be so complicated? When I was a kid, there was a Disney song. If they made things like they should, everything I tried would turn out good. The song was about all kinds of little things. I cleaned the kitchen from the bottom to the top, but the soap suds got above me, so I couldn't find my mop. So I don't know. What's about you? Why do they make things like they do? Bathtubs have a bottom, but they have no lid, and all that water on the floor wouldn't be there if they did. I don't know. What's about you? Why do they make things like they do? And I remember this silly song because there are so many times that we are no less silly about things that are much more meaningful in our life than all that water on the floor wouldn't be there if they did make lids to the bathtub, right? But we're also being silly. We don't have good answers. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, and there are all kinds of answers as to why Hashem created the world with challenges. But the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm kind, I'm loving, I want what's good for you, and you won't always have answers. There will be things you'll have to contend with which you won't understand. But what you may not do is what the Jewish people did in this week's parasha. To say, I will look at it negatively, to do what Adam and Eve did and say, God hates us. He kept the best food for himself. B'sinat Hashem otanu, otzianu me'etz Mitzrayim. He hates us. That's why he took us out of Egypt. And that's the Lashon Hara, and it's Lashon Hara that stems from a weakness within. And every person has to work on it. If giants like Doeg HaDomi fell by this, and Shaul fell, and Shaul was a huge tzaddik, Shaul was worthy of being the Mashiach, David was worthy of being the Mashiach, and David fell. And again, remember that to listen to Lashon Hara is worse than to tell over Lashon Hara. It's a huge challenge. And when people stand up to this challenge, they create worlds. And when people fall in this challenge, they destroy worlds. They destroy their own world. They destroy other people's worlds. Lashon Hara, the Gemara says, kills the person who tells it over, kills the person who listens to it, and kills the people about whom it was told. And we're talking about true Lashon Hara. We're talking about telling the truth, not lying, not exaggerating, not twisting the truth, not making appraisals, I think that. Just the truth. Just the facts. And even so, it is the most destructive force. It is what brought about the destruction of the Jewish people in the desert, and then later on, giants like Shaul and David, etc. So the spies have a tremendous yetzer hara to come back and say it's a bad land. And Yoshua sees he's going to fall, he gets a blessing from Moshe. Kalev sees he's going to fall, he goes to pray. He goes to Ma'arat HaMachpelah. It says that Ma'arat HaMachpelah is the place of prayer. It says all the deceased come there to pray. The deceased. Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So Kalev goes there to daven. Here we see a few concepts. Number one, when we have a test, we should daven. It's not enough that you recognize this as a test. I don't know what's about you, but this has happened to me many times. I don't know about many times, but it's happened to me. That I walked into a conversation telling myself, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. And a second later, I find myself saying what I just told myself, I'm not going to say that. Never happened to you? Okay, it's happened to me. Kalev davens. He davens because he knows how easy it is to get swept when other people do what's wrong. One of the things we daven about is we shouldn't become a part of a group that does something that's wrong. We should try to choose our neighbors, our friends, the people we sit next to in shul, the people we associate with. And then it defines a lot of who you're going to be. You're going to go on a trip. Choose who you go on the trip with. So they come back and they start saying bad. So how long does it take to tour all of Israel? A lot of time. They did it in 40 days. Hashem is going to punish them. Yom Lashana, Yom Lashana. A day for every day they spend traveling, they're going to spend a year in the desert. So Hashem makes it real fast. They could finish it in 40 days. And here we see how a person behaves when they really care for someone else. When you really care, then you try to make sure things work out right, even when they're doing something that's wrong. So the spies are going to get punished, and Hashem says, let me minimize the punishment. When we care about someone, even when they mess up, we try to minimize their mess up. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them how to tour the land. Rashi says, like a seller. When you want to sell something, you show a person something good, and then you show them even better, and then you show them even better. And this way you convince them to buy what you're selling. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to sell the land of Israel? The land of Israel is the best place in the world. You have to sell the land of Israel? The answer is yes. Even when you're selling something positive, you have to sell it. Avraham Avinu is married to one of the most beautiful women that ever lived, one of the most pious women that ever lived. Her name is Sarah. And yet, when the angels come to Avraham Avinu's house, they start complimenting Sarah in a roundabout way. They say to him, you know, wherever we go, the wife is sitting out with the guys. Where's your wife? So he says, no, she's in the tent. And he thinks to himself, oh, Sarah's a really modest woman. Avram, you've been married to her the better part of a century. You don't know she's a very modest woman? He does know. But you could help a person see the positive in something. That's why they say that line. That's what the Gemara in Maseches Baba Kama tells us. So all of us could use that encouragement to see the positive. It's a good idea. When we talk positive, we become happier people. And we help other people see the positive. Tonight was a very good dinner. Machon Meir, I said to myself, tonight I have to write a letter to the staff to thank them for the dinner that they made tonight. So, what? Yeah. Yeah, but you know, some places give you a very simple dinner every night. And here, every night there's something else. They try to make it interesting and satiating. It's very nice. When we take time to appreciate, we share it with other people, then they're happier, we're happier. Moshe Rabbeinu takes time to show them how good the land is. You will, Be'ezat Hashem, get phone calls. People will ask you about your friends for shiduchim. Find ways to say positive. Even though the person's positive, we should find ways to compliment. I told you guys the story about rice, right? We once had a guest in our house, and he sat there and he didn't stop complimenting the rice. This is the most amazing rice I've ever eaten. I never knew rice could be so delicious. He went on and on for 5 minutes about my wife's rice. Ever since then, whenever my wife serves rice, it's not only a family joke, I really get excited over rice. Now, I have no idea if my wife's rice is any different than anyone else's rice. But there was a guest who spent 5 minutes complimenting the rice. That's it. I get excited over rice. He hit my heart. Initially, we thought he was nuts. But when he kept going for 5 minutes, so then you start thinking, this is special rice. Until today, I think it's special rice. Why not? But we can do that for people. We can do that. Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to show them the good of the land of Israel. The good of the land of Israel. And they come back. Why do they think Hashem hates them? Because they know that they were pagan in Egypt. They think maybe that's why Hashem's upset at us. Deep down inside, one of the reasons that people have this feeling is because a person knows they're not worthy. A person has to remind themselves that they are worthy of Hashem's love. That Hashem wants to love them. Rabba Munatecha, we say every morning. Hashem has great faith. He gives us another chance today. But can we really connect to that, or do we walk around with this feeling of maybe Hashem's upset at me? Maybe that's why my life is so difficult. And that's the step before a person says, oh, Hashem is not kind to me, and all kinds of negative things like the Jewish people said here. So the step one, Chazal tell us, was the Jewish people thinking, yeah, we were pagan back then, so maybe Hashem still upset at us now. It's food for thought. Sometimes we don't notice how destructive those negative thoughts are in our relationship with Hashem. When a person is beating up on themselves, sometimes they're really beating up on their relationship. I'll tell you a secret about marriage. You ask most husbands, do you love your wife? They'll say yes. You ask most husbands, does your wife love you? They'll say, I don't know. You ask most wives, do you love your husband? They'll say yes. You ask most wives, does your husband love you? They'll say, I don't know. That's a crazy reality. Think about what that means. Both sides know that they love the other side. But both sides doubt whether the other side loves them. And if a person is willing to believe that the other side loves them, then they could build a real relationship. We have the same challenge with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why does a husband doubt whether his wife loves him? Because he told her 1,000 times that he wants sweet challah for Shabbos and she buys salty challah for Shabbos. He told her 1,000 times that he wants egg salad and she makes some tuna. Whatever. It's stupid things. But at the end of the day, it leaves him at a place where he's like, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? It's the same thing as the Jewish people. Hashem did you 10 plagues. What didn't he do for you? He's giving you food from heaven every day. Your wife doesn't make you a sandwich? Ah, she made tuna instead of egg salad. I don't know if she loves me. We're the same stupid people. All of us. We have the same weakness. It's a stupidity. That a person can look at life and look at the person who's investing the most for their happiness and say, I don't know. I don't know, right? Every husband and wife can tell you, I don't know. Right. But you see, the Jewish people were able to say that to their Ribbono Shel Olam on the same day that they were eating man that fell from heaven. Hashem hates us. That's why he brought us here. But we do the same thing. The wife can kill herself doing laundry, doing shopping, doing cooking, doing cleaning. And the husband comes home and says, yeah, but there's a tuna, not egg salad. She doesn't love me. Right? That's the Lashon Hara that's going on in our parasha. So the Jewish people can say, Hashem must hate us. And so they come back, and every spy goes into his own house and goes into a corner and starts weeping. And the families come over to them and they say, Abba, what's wrong? And he looks at them and he says, you're adorable. My Pnina, I can't fathom the idea that you will be murdered by the people in Israel. And then he goes back to his corner and starts crying. And then his daughter says, but Abba, what do you mean? And he says, I'm telling you, I was just there. There are giants there. Everyone's going to be killed. Everyone. And slowly they convince their own families. The families go to the neighbors. The neighbors come in. And they go and they start convincing the Jewish people to rebel against Moshe and Aaron till it reaches a point where the 10 leaders themselves pick up rocks and they start chasing Moshe and Aaron to kill them. And that's the Vayomeru Kolaida. The 10 people said, Lirgom otam ba'avanim. We're all taking rocks, we're going to kill Moshe and Aaron. Chvod Hashem, and then the honor of Hashem appears. Here we see how things can evolve. Moshe took them out of Mitzrayim. Moshe did all the miracles for them. And now they look at something which they don't see how it's surmountable. So now Moshe becomes the bad guy. So, we've hit a breaking point. And this happens to most people many times in their life. When they're about to cross the threshold to the biggest blessing of their life, people suddenly mess up. And sometimes they never recover. And this is a recurring theme in people's lives. The Jewish people are about to enter the land of Israel. The greatest thing is about to happen in their lives. They've been waiting for this. And they mess up. They send the spies and they turn on Moshe and Aaron. They turn on Hashem. And the same thing happens when couples are about to celebrate their 10th anniversary, their 20th anniversary. When people are about to hit something very positive in their life. So Hashem sends them this challenge where they can really unravel all the good that they've built up to here and all the good that's about to happen. And many times people slip and mess up. So the spies have said the land is a destructive land, people die. The nation is so powerful, even if they're outside their cities, they'll destroy us. They're surrounded with our enemies, we have no way of approaching them. Their cities are walled, we have no way of destroying them. We're just going to lose and die. And they said, you can't even look at them. There are giants there that are sons of God. Hanifilim b'nei anak. They are people who are so scary, you can't even look at them. The people here are like skyscrapers. You can't see them. You can't crane your neck high enough to see the giants there. And that whole night of Tisha B'Av, the nation spends weeping. So it's the night of Tisha B'Av, the spies came back, and the nation is weeping. Hashem says, Atem b'chitem b'chiya shel chinam, you cried needlessly, ani ikva oto lel b'chiya ledorot. Hashem says it will be a set night for weeping forever. And that's why it says in the prophet Jeremiah that when Tzidkio, the king, saw Nebuchadnezzar's soldiers approaching, it says they fled Vayetze'u Laila Minair. That night they escaped the city of Jerusalem. And that's what Jeremiah warns him in the beginning of the book. You will still say Kumu v'na'ale v'alayla. The Babylonian Empire will say, let's approach them on this night and destroy Jerusalem. And that's what the Navi forewarned it would be on Tisha B'Av. It came to fruition on Tisha B'Av. And that's what it says earlier in Yirmiyahu. Kadeshu alei milchama, the Babylonians will say, let's focus our battle against Jerusalem. Kumu v'na'ale v'tzoraim, let's ascend in the noon. Whoa, the night is settling on us. It's the night of Tisha B'Av when they finally broke into the Beit HaMikdash and burnt down the second temple. So the first temple was Babylonian, second temple was the Romans. The Navi Yechezkel records that when it was decreed on this night of Tisha B'Av, it was also decreed that we would be exiled, future exiles. Not only that we wouldn't enter. And that's what we find in Tehillim. If you open to Psalms, the 106th chapter, so it records what happened in this week's parsha. It says over there, Vayimasu be'eretz chemda. The Jewish people were disgusted with the chosen land. Lo haeminu lidvaro. They didn't trust what Hashem said they would get this land. Vayiragenu va'oleihem. They all complained in their tents. Lo shamu b'kol Hashem. They weren't willing to listen to what Hashem had said. Vayisay yado lahem. Hashem took a vow against them. Le'apil otam b'midbar. To make them all fall in the desert. That's a decree of the 40 years. And then, ule'apil zaram b'goyim. To make their descendants ultimately fall among the nations, ulzarotam ba'aratzot, and to scatter them among the nations. So in Tehillim we have a record that on this night in the desert, Hashem decreed already that the future exiles would also come. Did I make a shehako? I don't think so. Comment, 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 comment Pasuk says in Mishlei, Chirdat Adam Yitin Mokesh. The fear of man creates a stumbling for him. That's an important rule in life. Our own fear, Chirdat Adam, the fear of man, Yitin Mokesh. Being scared of someone causes one to stumble themselves. Sometimes fear is more dangerous than the danger itself. Right? What did Churchill say? Roosevelt. We have nothing to fear but fear in itself. So the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Chirdat Adam, the fear of man, Yiten Mokesh, creates a stumbling block for him. So the Jewish people in the desert were very scared. And that's what we learned in Yeshaya. The Navi Yeshaya says, Mi'at v'tir'i me'enosh yamut. Why are you scared, Jewish people, from a human? A mere mortal is going to die. Umi ben adam chatzir yinaten. The man will ultimately be fertilizer. Why are you scared of him? And you forgot Hashem who created you, who created the heavens, who created the earth. What are you worried about? This is a very important concept in how we function in life. When people are worried about their jobs, when people are worried about all kinds of things, they should take out a book of Emunah, whatever book talks to you. Because when we remind ourselves that Hashem is the boss, then we also remind ourselves, I don't have to be scared, right? Rabbi Nachman, v'aikar lo lefached klal. We have concerns, we have to deal with them. We shouldn't fear. The fear is what destroys us. That's what destroyed the Jewish people here. So Kalev and Yoshua tried to convince the people that we will still succeed. That we can still succeed. And Hashem says, Ad ana yenatsuni amazet. Till when will the nation blaspheme? And the word Ad ana in Psalms is a code for the four exiles. If you want, look up Rashi on Tehillim, Psalms 13, Tehillim Yud Gimel, where the psalm begins with four declarations of Ad ana, till when. And each one corresponds to a different nation that would take us down. Another nation under who we would be in exile. And so Hashem says, Ad ana, till when, yena'atsuni ha'amazeh, will this nation blaspheme against me? So Moshe starts praying. Hashem is very upset at us, and even though we are very wrong, Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, as the good leaders always did, he starts praying. Hashem says to Moshe, I'll send a plague, wipe them out, and make you into the great nation. And Moshe says, you know what will happen? The Egyptians will say that you couldn't take down the gods of Israel. If you kill them all, they'll say, you see, Hashem wasn't powerful enough to take down the gods of Israel. He could only take down the Egyptian gods, not the gods of Israel. So Hashem, in the name of your honor, you have declared that you are Erech Apayim, slow to anger, Rav Chesed, great in your kindness, Nosei Avon, you're willing to carry the weight of one's transgression, even Fasha, one's rebellious ways. So Hashem, in the name of your traits, don't wipe out the Jewish people. And Hashem tells him, Salachti Kidvarecha. What does Salachti Kidvarecha mean? Salachti Kidvarecha. So, one interpretation says that Moshe was still quoting. He said, Ribon Shom, you were so patient with the people, Vayomer Hashem, and you even said, Salachti Kidvarecha. You were willing to forgive them with the golden calf. So now I'm also asking you to forgive them. And so Hashem says, no, I'm not forgiving them. Ulam Chayani, I swear, I'm not forgiving them. Other interpretations say, no, Hashem said, Salachti Kidvarecha, I'm willing to forgive like you said. And here there's a beautiful medrash. Why were the Jewish people punished to be in the desert for 40 years? So it says because of the golden calf and the transgression with the spies. Ordinarily we say it's the spies, but there are sources that say that the two together fused, and together we ended up suffering in the desert for 40 years. That when we transgressed with the spies, so then the sin of the golden calf came back to haunt us. And then Hashem said, now we're done. That's it. 40 years here in the desert, this generation is not entering the land of Israel. So Rav Shlomo Fisher said a beautiful pshat. There's a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Tractate Sanhedrin that Reish Lakish wanted to go along with the rabbis to learn how you sanctify the how you make a year into a leap year. The rabbis used to have special calculations. They'd go up to an attic. They'd sit together to calculate. So Reish Lakish asked to come along. He wanted to go up to the attic. The chief rabbi was Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish came along. The rabbis are traveling to that special attic where they'd sit and do the calculations. And as they're traveling, they see a person who's pruning his trees on Shemitah. So Reish Lakish says, Kohen v'zamir, look at that. There's a guy who's pruning his trees on Shemitah. We should make a ruling against him. So they tell him, no, maybe he needs the firewood. Maybe he's not really pruning. He needs more firewood for his fireplace. Don't come in the court against him. They continue traveling, and Reish Lakish is wondering what's going on with these rabbis. And again, they see a man pruning his trees. Again, Reish Lakish says, let's sit down as a court and take him to task. It's Shemitah. He's pruning his trees. So they said, no, if shale ekel beit abadu tzarich. Maybe his olive press, he's pressing the olives from last year, and his olive press, the main beam of the olive press broke, and that's why he's cutting down that wood to make a new beam for his olive press. So you don't know that he's really doing anything wrong on Shemitah, leave him alone. So Reish Lakish looks at them and says, the word ekel is the beam of an olive press. The word ekel also means twisted. So he says, God knows if he needs the ekel or there's a kalkalot, or you're all twisted here in the way you're looking at it. God knows. But okay. He continues going with them. They reach the building where they go up. They all climb the ladder. Reish Lakish starts climbing the ladder. They close the attic door. They lock it. Terudu Adain, they said, he's a nuisance. Leave him out. So Reish Lakish goes running to Rav Yochanan. And he says, Rabbi, how could you entrust people who you can't even trust for Shemitah? How could you let them decide if to make this year a leap year? So Rav Yochanan starts arguing with him. Why do you view them that way, etc.? So the question's asked, Rabbi Reish Lakish, you're a big rabbi, but until they kicked you out, you didn't go running to Rabbi Yochanan, right? When they say you're a nuisance and they lock the door, stay out, then you go running to Rabbi Yochanan. If you really held they were wrong, why didn't you go to Rabbi Yochanan beforehand? Good question. So the Noda Behuda, Rabbi Cheska Landau, in his commentary on the stories of Talmud, he says the following idea. He says we have a verse. It says like this: Matzdik rasha umarshia tzadik toavat Hashem kam sheneihem. Matzdik rasha. If someone always says good things about the wicked, umarshia tzadik, and he always says bad things about the people who are kind, who are pious, so Hashem hates both of these types of people. So the Noda Behuda said, you have to read the pasuk a little differently. You have people who they have a good thing to say about anyone. Anyone they see, they could say good things about them. So, okay, you could live with that. You have people who they're checking everything. Everything has to be perfect, and no one's perfect enough for them. So they have a bad thing to say about everyone. No one's perfect enough. His Shmon Esher was too long. His Shmon Esher was too short. He davened too loudly. He davened too quietly. Everyone they have a comment on. But they have a comment about everyone. Okay, you could live with it. You agree, you disagree, you could live with it. But when you have a person who, when he sees the wicked, He has good things to say about them. They're okay, don't treat them so toughly. When he sees the pious, so but them, he says, no, yep. He's got all the kinds, he's not right, he's not perfect. So when he has the two in the same person, about the wicked, he can say positive. About the pious, he's got nothing good to say. So then Hashem says, that's disgusting, I can't handle that. So about Hashem, Hashem says, when you have both together, then Hashem says, that's disgusting. Reish Lakish came to Rav Yochanan and he said, I was traveling with these rabbis. They saw all these people transgressing. And every time they had a good word to say, I could live with that. But then when I want to come learn with them, I'm a good guy. You don't need to find good excuses to let me learn. I'm doing what's right. But no, I'm not good enough. They locked the door. I'm a nudnik. So then it's not fair. Then I say, wait a second. So then how come for everyone else you had a good eye? For me, you have a bad eye? If you have a good eye, you should have a good eye for everyone. What does that mean? You have a good eye for all those people transgressing Shemitah. But when the rabbi walks in, you say, no, he's a nudnik, leave him out of here. So that's why we enter Rabbi Yochanan. So Shlomo Fisher said, the same thing happened with the golden calf. Moshe Rabbeinu turned to Hashem and said, this is a nation of believers. They believed in you, Hashem. They believed in me. They believed in a golden calf. They believe any. They believe. So Hashem said, oh, okay, if that's your excuse, we'll go with it. But then came the story of the spies. Hashem says, "Uvadavar hazeh einchem aminim." Now you suddenly don't believe. You ask good questions, right? How's Hashem going to take down the giants? How's Hashem going to overcome their fortification? You have all these questions. Why didn't you ask that about your golden calf? You were willing to appoint a golden calf to lead you. Moshe wasn't here. You said, this is the force that took us out of Egypt. This is the force that will lead us into Israel. Ah, so you don't just believe. Your whole excuse for the golden calf, Moshe, was these people have a tendency to believe, so they believed the golden calf. That excuse just fell. So when they transgressed with the spies, Hashem said, okay, now you have no excuse on the golden calf. Now the two of them are going to sink the Jewish people. The sin of the golden calf came back to haunt us, and when the two fused, that's when Hashem said, okay, now they're not going in. Yes, Mr. Schultz. But that was long ago. At this point, he was one of the chief rabbis of Israel. He was a big tzaddik and a big Talmud Chacham. He did a big tshuva at this point. At this point, he was already a really big tzaddik. And he personally took down thieves. Right? You know the story. Rav Yochanan once showed up to yeshiva. He didn't have his wallet. They asked him what happened. He said a bunch of thieves stole his money. So Reish Lakish said, show me where they went. They showed him the direction. He jumped on his own horse and rode after them. He caught up to them. And they look back and they see this big Reish Lakish coming after them. He was a very big man. So they stop and they look at him and they say, what do you want? And he says, give back Rav Yochanan's wallet. So they said, what are you talking about? So he said, you know who you stole from? The big rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan. How could you steal from Rabbi Yochanan? Be ashamed of you. Give me back that wallet. So they looked at him. Is he for real? But he was so intense that they said, okay, we didn't know he was such a big rabbi. Okay, we'll give you half the money back. Fine. They take out the wallet and Reish Lakish says, you're crazy. You're going to steal half his money? Give me back the whole wallet. And he stood there and they saw that he was serious and sincere. They gave him back the whole wallet. They gave him everything. So Reish Lakish had really changed. He had done a real tshuva. He wasn't... So, Hashem says, they said they're scared their next generation is going to die in the desert. This is the 10th time that they're trying me. That's it. They said they don't want to enter the land of Israel, so they won't. They said they want to die in the desert, they will. But I am telling you, leave. Your enemies are nearby, and at this point you won't succeed. Turn around, it's time to travel back to the Yam Suf. Time to travel back where you came from. You got 40 years of wandering. And this introduces us to a very difficult existence. For a person to know that so long as they live, their child can't move forward. Their whole crying was, Ribon Shalolam, why are you doing this to us? We don't want our future generations to die. And the Ribon Shalom said, oh, you want to stick around the desert? Fine, you'll stick around the desert and the future generation will succeed. But they're going to have to put up patiently with 40 years of waiting for you to die. It was a very interesting punishment for the Jewish people. The Medrash says, every year on Tisha B'Av, every one of these people who were aged 20 and up would dig a grave. They dig graves on the eve of Tisha B'Av. Everyone would go to sleep, lie down in the grave. And then they'd see who would wake up the next morning. Imagine for a minute, this probably had more meaning than Yom Kippur for them. They'd have a last supper. They'd sit there and tell their family how much they love them. Imagine you're going to sleep in your grave. You don't know if you're getting up tomorrow morning. I don't know who slept that night. But I do know that people probably went around to one another and asked Mechila. People probably tried to make sure they were as clean as can be. Imagine what type of Mairiv that was, right? Get up to Daven. You know, thousands of people are dying tonight. I don't know how they ever stopped davening. I don't know how they ever made it to the grave. Right? How do you ever lie down? So that was their existence for the next 40 years. Hashem tells them to travel. And the exception is going to be Kalev and Yoshua. And that we have to know. Rav Neventzal once said to me, he said, you should know. When you stand up for what's right, especially when everyone around you is doing what's wrong, on the moment, it's very hard. In the long run, it is the moment that is the source of greatest blessing in your life. You should know that whenever people stand up for what's right, especially when everyone around them goes for what's wrong, ultimately, they look back and they can identify that moment as a turning point of blessing in their life. Those are important words of encouragement because at the moment, the person doesn't feel like he's going to win. Kalev and Yoshua had to stand up to a crowd that was ready to kill them. But now they're going to live. Everyone else is going to die. You guys know the Medrash about how the 10 spies died, right? The Medrash says their tongue extended to their navel, and they had the tongue went extended all the way down to their belly button and attached, and then they had vermin that would crawl down their tongue through their navel and back up again.
Start again.
Their tongue extended because they had transgressed with their tongue. They had said lashon hara.
This is really true.
I wasn't there, but as a child, that's the Medrash I grew up on. Your children will grow up on the Medrash, at least you should know it. Whether the Medrash means literally or not is a good question, but the Medrash is important nonetheless. The picture that kids grow up with, since I'm a child, I know this Medrash. How did they die? Their tongues extended down to their belly button, attached, and then they had vermin crawling all around.
They only died on Tisha B'Av.
The spies died before Tisha B'Av.
The rest of the people.
The rest of the people, that's what it seems like, yeah, according to that Midrash.
Lashon Hara.
Correct.
Second temple.
Tov, we move forward. There are people who make a critical mistake, pun intended. They say, now we're going to do it! Now we're going up! Moshe says, no, God said it's not going to work. No, we're going to go. Moshe says, but Hashem isn't with you. So there are always those people who are diehards at the wrong time. There are always people like that. They wake up too late and they do the right thing at the wrong time and then they die. Here they all get killed. But I'm saying people make this mistake. Unfortunately, you guys are laughing. I've been to funerals of people like this. There are people who go with very good intentions down a path that's very pious, only at the wrong time. And you have the example of that in Avram Avinu's brother, right? Haran. When they ask Avram, are you going to bow or give up your life in the name of Hashem? He says, I'm willing to go in the name of Hashem. So he walks out unscathed. And Haran says, okay, I'll do it too. And he burns at the stake. That's not the right timing. That's not the right way to do it. To say it after Avraham Avinu is Hashem says, no miracle for you. Okay, you'll do it too, fine. Had he said it earlier with Avraham, he would have lived. Had Haran said at the same moment as Avraham, I don't know if Hashem will save me or won't save me, I'm with Hashem. So there's good reason to assume that he would have had the same miracle, but he didn't. He woke up after Avraham Avinu. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, oh, now you want a miracle? Okay, no. No. And again, this is a recurring theme. If you'll pay attention, you'll see in life also. Moshe tells him, you're not going to succeed. There's no mitzvah now to do this. That's another thing. People sometimes read things in the Torah and they think it means now. Is there a mitzvah now to do that? People sometimes make decisions on life and death based on things, concepts that they think are right. Why we have to research. What does the halacha really say? What's the right answer here? So they go, and they're attacked. And it's very interesting. We have a tradition that when they were attacked, every time an Amaleki would hit a Jew, the Jew would die and the Amaleki would die. That's why in the book of Devarim it's described, they hit you like the bees. Just like there are types of bees that when they sting they die, so too Amalek saw that they'd hit the Jew would die and they would die. And they kept hitting the Jew. So this is the first suicide bomber. Okay, the Amaleki, he's willing to die in order to kill a Jew. This is in our parasha. Hashem tells the Jewish people, when you come to the land of Israel and you bring a sacrifice, so you should know you'll add to that sacrifice a flour offering and a wine offering. And this description of a mitzvah when you come into the land of Israel is a big encouragement. The idea that they will still come in. Hashem is encouraging the future generations, because what the kid said is, I know this is never going to happen. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but many times kids say, oh, we were going to go on this trip last week and it didn't work, so it's not going to work this week either. Right? Kids, sometimes they plan a trip in school and then it's raining that day, so they say, okay, no trip this week. And then next week when they plan it again, the kids say, okay, last week didn't work, it's not going to work again this week. There's human nature that way. So Hashem gave us a mitzvah right away about what's going to happen when we enter the land of Israel, because the next generation, the kids, started thinking, our parents messed up as they were on the verge of entering, we probably will too. Hashem tells them the next mitzvah, the mitzvah of challah. When we come into the land of Israel, so we will make bread, and we take off of that bread, we give to the kohen. That's the mitzvah of challah. You take off a little bit, and you give it to the kohen. The mitzvah of challah, the Medrash says in the beginning of the Torah, Bereshit bara Elokim tashamayim v'et haaretz, Bereshit. For Reishit. Reishit is the description of challah. Reishit arisotechem, the beginning of your dough. Challah tarimu teruma, take off challah as truma for the Kohen. So challah is called Reishit, the first of our dough. So the Medrash says, Bereishit bara Elokim tashamayim v'taretz. For the mitzvah of challah, which is called Reishit, Hashem created the heaven and earth. Why is the mitzvah of challah so important? So perhaps the message of the mitzvah of challah is the message that's a recurring theme in Torah. The idea that you can take the physical world, take something of it, and make it holy. Man is also only a part of the physical world, but man can be holy, and that changes everything. They asked Rav Steinman once if these, you know, this organization Charity, where they have 24 hours, if you donate X amount, then someone else will donate corresponding to yours, matching donations, right? So they have 24 hours where you have to try and donate X amount, and then you get, you fund this organization. You guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah? So they asked Rav Steinman, what he thinks of this. They have online, every so often you get an email, within the next 24 hours, if we raise $1 million, then we have three other donors who will give us another million each. So when you give $1, you're giving $4. You're not giving $1. Okay, so because a donor will match your, you have three donors who will match your donation. So there's one almost every week, yeah. So it's, there's a 24-hour period like this. So they asked Rav Steinman, is this a good idea or a bad idea? So he said, it's a great idea. They asked him why. He said, because 24 hours is the time span where a person can be a tzaddik. Since we can do that for 24 hours, we can try in 24 hours to be a tzaddik for these 24 hours. So you give a donation, he gives a donation, we can try in 24 hours to uplift ourselves. Sometimes people want to take something on forever. The concept of challah is take something and make it holy. You don't have to take the whole bread and give it to the kohen. You're going to eat all that bread, you're going to enjoy all that bread. Take something and make it holy. We take something of our money and we give it to charity. The Torah keeps training us to take something. We take one day of the week, we make it Shabbos. We take one day of the year, we make it Yom Kippur. We take a part, and then it reflects on everything. And that's the idea of the Jewish people. It's a part of the world that's supposed to affect the rest of the world. We are also called challah. In the Medrash, the Jewish people are called challah of the world. Adam Arishon is called challah of the world. There's a whole physical world out there. You're supposed to affect it. You're the little bit that was made holy. Okay. At the end of the parsha, we have the story. They're out in the desert and they find a man working on Shabbos, right? Mekoshei Sheitzim. Yes. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's Shabbos. And they see a man who's doing something with wood on Shabbos. Either gathering wood, cutting wood. And they warn him it's Shabbos. And he says, I'm doing it anyways. And they say, you're going to get the death penalty. And he says, I'm doing it anyways. And he continues what he's doing. And he gets the death penalty. So what's going on? So Chazal tell us it was the first Shabbos after the story of the spies. The people of Israel didn't feel like keeping Shabbos. The people of Israel were saying, it's over, look at what the Ribbono Shel Olam's done to us. We're not entering land of Israel. We're going to live 40 years now just suffering in this desert. So the people of Israel were not too inspired to keep that Shabbos. It was a period of mourning in the Jewish people. And so this man was a pious man. And he said, I want everyone to know that you cannot transgress Shabbos. And he went out with the intention that he would be a martyr, that he would make an example of himself. Moshe Rabbeinu set up the police force that Shabbos to check to make sure everyone keeps Shabbos. He had guards going all around the camp saying, it's Shabbos, no one should do anything. You're not inspired this Shabbos, you're upset this Shabbos. Don't transgress Shabbos. Don't lose that point. But people weren't holding there. People were all feeling like, I don't want to keep Shabbos this week. Shabbos is a day of connection between me and Hashem. I don't feel that connection. I'm not inspired to keep Shabbos this week. So Moshe teaches them a pivotal rule. You're more inspired, you're less inspired, you still hold on to the pact. You don't break the pact. But this man, this tzaddik, he said, we're going to lose. Someone's going to sneak out there and do a task on Shabbos. Someone's going to sneak out there. People inside their houses. People aren't holding there. So he went out publicly and he started collecting wood. And witnesses came and said, you're going to get the death penalty. And he ignored them. And he kept collecting the wood. So they grabbed him. They told him, you're going to get the death penalty. He continued doing what he was doing. They grabbed him and they brought him into the guard. And their Ribbono Shel Olam said, he gets the death penalty. Word went out in the camp. One man did work on Shabbos. And he's getting the death penalty. No one else did work on Shabbos. He saved the whole Jewish people with what he did. Because people were contemplating what to do in their homes. And this man said, I'll go publicly. If he really needed that wood, what did he need the wood for? He's going to make a fire on Shabbos. He needed to make, he made an example of himself. Whether he was right or wrong is a good question. But his intentions were pious. That's what our sages tell us. We will, Be'ezrat Hashem, reconvene Thursday.